Welcome back to another sci-fi episode where psychology and finances collide. We'll continue to examine how we think, feel, and behave with money as it relates to chronic financial pain. If you haven't listened to the first couple episodes of this series, I would encourage you to listen to those episodes first, as it kind of creates a foundation. And this next episode will pick up where I left off. We talked about cognitive restructuring and cognitive diffusion and those thinking errors or core beliefs that are keeping us from reducing our suffering and actually are increasing our suffering or our financial pain. And so as these healthcare providers are working with chronic pain patients, so is sci-fi attempting to work with chronic financial pain clients to help them move towards a life with a higher quality of life, higher quality of financial living. Just like a healthcare provider works with chronic pain patients with mindfulness, so am I going to help present some of those mindfulness concepts. This is nothing new. I also provided a mindfulness episode that you can listen to in our 2025 season 4. I will be sure to link the episode into the show notes if you would like to take a listen to that for a little more depth and breadth on the topic of mindfulness and how it deals with finances, including your emotion mind, your reasonable mind, and your wise mind. It really goes into depth there. And for chronic pain, there is an approach called mindfulness-based stress reduction. It teaches mindfulness techniques to help patients develop a new relationship with their pain, decreasing emotional distress, and increasing overall quality of life. And that's exactly what I want to help you do with financial pain. This is also an evidence-based approach, which has resulted in pain reduction, a decrease in depression and anxiety and stress, and increase in overall functioning. So how does it work? So mindfulness is like awareness. You are approaching this financial pain from a non-judgmental stance. You're observing this financial pain and the pain sensations without reacting to them emotionally. You're distinguishing between pain and suffering. You're shifting the relationship with pain from fixing it to accepting it as part of one's experience, which paradoxically reduces that suffering. And in the midst, you are increasing your self-awareness and your emotional, well, you're reducing your emotional reactivity, which for a lot of folks, emotional reactivity in the financial world includes overspending and other impulsive financial practices. So here's some examples, and let me go a little bit further and deeper into the woods within mindfulness as it relates to chronic financial pain. So again, the goal isn't to make the financial problems disappear with wishful thinking, but to fundamentally change how you experience and respond to those pains, which in turn make you more capable of addressing them effectively. And then it increases your confidence as well, which is a natural motivator to continue to do that something different. Mindfulness provides the tools to sit with the hurt or sit with the pain without piling on the suffering of emotional reactivity and self-judgment. Here's some specific mindfulness techniques. So, non-judgmentally observing financial pain sensations. This is about noticing the raw physical sensations of financial stress before your mind labels them and spins a story. So let's talk first about the financial body scan. So this is where you sit quietly for 3 minutes before you engage in a stressful financial task. maybe like reviewing your credit card statement. And we're getting close to getting those here pretty soon, especially from the holidays. And then you can close your eyes and bring your attention to your body. And I know this is going to sound a little frou-frou for some of you, but hang tight with me until we get through all of these. And you're like, you know what? That doesn't sound too bad. So where do you feel the financial stress? Is it a tightness in your chest, a pit in your stomach, a clenched jaw? And you're just simply asking yourself these questions. Where are you feeling this? And you're not trying to change the sensations. You're just noticing them with gentle curiosity, as if you were a scientist observing a phenomenon. Again, it's external from you. You breathe into those areas, simply acknowledging, yep, there's the tightness. Not, I am so anxious. It's a different way. It's actually, even in this mindfulness practice, you're actually challenging your thinking in the same process. And then here's another specific mindfulness technique. You're distinguishing between pain and suffering. This is where you separate the objective reality, the pain, from your mind's reaction to it, which is the suffering. How to practice it. When you feel a wave of financial stress, ask yourself these two questions. What is the pain here? That's the objective fact. My income this month is $500 less than my expenses. What is the suffering? And that includes the story, the judgment, and the behaviors that you're adding to it. So, for example, it might sound like the story that I am a failure, the feeling of shame, the urge to avoid looking at my accounts, the action of making an impulse purchase to feel better for a moment. Simply by categorizing them, you create a distinction. You realize that while the pain is real, the suffering is a separate process and one that you have some influence over. You actually have great influence over. Here's the third technique: shifting from fixing to accepting. Acceptance here doesn't mean giving up. It means acknowledging the reality of your starting point without draining your energy fighting it. You can't effectively plan a journey if you refuse to accept where you are on the map. If you can fix it, great. But if not, the focus turns to how to not make it worse, which therefore would increase your suffering. So the technique, this is a moment of struggle practice and how to practice it. This is a moment of struggle. It validates the pain. That's what you're telling yourself. And then you also tell yourself struggle is a part of life. And that connects you to common humanity, knowing that you're not alone in this. And then you could tell yourself, may I be kind to myself in this moment. And I know this sounds kumbaya-ish, but a lot of people need this self-compassion because they're not getting the compassion or validation from other folks, which is also increasing their suffering. So it offers that self-compassion instead of self-criticism. This shifts the energy from I need to fix this now to this is hard and I will be my own ally as I navigate it. So acceptance of the current reality frees up the mental resources that you need to take wise action, engaging the wise mind. And then here's the last mindfulness technique, increasing your self-awareness and decreasing emotional reactivity. This is about creating a pause between a financial trigger and your habitual reaction, like overspending. So there's a technique called urge surfing within chronic financial pain. When the urge to overspend arises, treat it like an ocean wave. Don't fight it or give in to it. Just surf it. Get curious about the urge itself. Notice where you feel it in your body. Notice how it grows in intensity, peaks, and then, if you just watch it without acting, eventually subsides on its own. By doing this, you learn that urges are temporary and you don't have to be controlled by them. I love this about mindfulness practice. And it just offers this sense of connection, further connection to yourself, but also appropriate disconnection from an outside or external voice. So another huge component or factor that can perpetuate pain, whether it's physical or financial, is fatigue and insomnia. It's easy to see how lack of sleep can worsen even the mildest of symptoms. And lack of sleep perpetuates fatigue and vice versa, another vicious cycle. And if you lose sleep over your chronic financial situation, you know what I'm talking about. That lack of sleep then lends to an overall financial malaise and fatigue where you find it difficult to tackle the simplest of financial tasks, like budgeting, let alone the more difficult tasks, like tax filing. Then, because you didn't budget or file your taxes, you lose even more sleep, leading to chronic insomnia and chronic fatigue. So this is where sleep hygiene is pulled in as a psychoeducational approach, providing several tips on creating the right space or environment for sleep. Sleep-inducing behaviors, like only using your bed for sleep. And there are several other points, but just to simplify, consistency, creating a routine, a sleep schedule, making sure your environment, like your bed, is only used for sleep, and then movement during the day, getting enough light exposure, vitamin D, which also helps your circadian rhythm, and making sure that you're limiting what you ingest, limiting stimulants like caffeine after a certain time in the day, and you're depriving yourself of naps. It's the same thing with chronic financial pain. When you're wanting to, instead of losing sleep over your financial issues so that you can actually get adequate rest, you have to create some level of consistency and routine and schedule. And you want to make your environment a happy place to be where you only associate that environment with that thing. So like your bed, you only use money for something that is consistent with your values or your goals. And you can see how chronic insomnia and fatigue are learned and perpetuated. It's not just something that falls out of the sky where all of a sudden you're not sleeping because of your financial issue. Many times you're not sleeping because of a learned behavior. And then without fully assessing what's going on, you unknowingly perpetuate that behavior and increase insomnia. And so fatigue also gets honorable mention here, especially when it comes to this chronic pain clinic that I'm putting on for you. How it's manifested in chronic financial pain, you'll see it as apathy, inactivity, inaction, and an overall malaise. And I tend to call this group of symptoms a financial parasite, where you're just wasting away. And that's dangerous. And I'll also see the same boom and bust cycle that physical therapists and physicians see with their chronic pain patients, where maybe you had the day of feeling good and having enough energy, and that's considered a boom, and you did several demanding things in one day, and the next day you can't even move or get out of bed. That's the bust. So that boom and bust cycle, just like it is educated to chronic pain patients, I can use that same education with chronic financial pain clients, because a lot of times you'll find the energy to do some financial things. I'm going to create a budget, going to get on track with paying these bills. And it was on a day that you were feeling good, and maybe you overdid it a little bit. And then the next day is like, that apathy sets right back in. So to interrupt this cycle, it's about understanding that paradoxically speaking, too much rest increases fatigue, and too much activity also increases fatigue. And then you're at risk for a fear-based avoidance that occurs where you're scared to do anything ever again. And here's an empirical piece of evidence that I found absolutely fascinating and closely tied to what I see in the financial session is that perfectionism increases fatigue. Folks give up before they ever begin because if they can't see themselves doing it perfectly, they don't even want to try. So the fix to that is what a lot of folks will also use with their patients. It's called activity pacing. And that is preventing overexertion or preventing overwhelming thoughts and even preventing perfectionism. So the core strategies with activity pacing is breaking tasks into smaller tasks. So for the financial side, like, okay, I know that I need to create a spend plan. I'll just start with listing what my income is. Let me get all the income sources. That'll be my first small step. And maybe the next day you start listing all of your expenses. Maybe the next day you're listing 10 expenses and then you sleep on it and you start taking more notes. You list your next 10 expenses. And you're also setting time limits on this. And I'll break all these down in some examples with you in just a moment. And then you're alternating activity and rest periods. Because what I see a lot of folks do in session is before they even came to see me, like I said, they had to do this level of exposure or gradual exposure therapy where they had to create this cash flow, pull in all the numbers into the Excel spreadsheet that I've sent them, which took them some time and effort on their part. And so they do all that. They gather all their materials. They go through the session and there's that boom. And then there's a bust. And that boom and bust cycle, like, oh, okay, this was a great session. I'm on a high. I'm feeling euphoric. I'm feeling energized. And then 6 weeks go by and they haven't come in for a follow-up. We want to pace these activities so that you actually are preventing that overexertion. And so you have some energy left in the storehouses to do that next thing. So you're also prioritizing the activities. You're listening to your body's signals as you're doing this. Yes, even in financial counseling, there are a lot of physiological responses as you are working with your finances. And using assistive tools and supports, maybe an Excel spreadsheet, maybe using some artificial intelligence and other supports like free apps that you can download on your phone. So many different ways that you can look at that. And it helps you build trust with your financial abilities again. Just like doctors are trying to help their patients with activity pacing to help them build trust with their bodies again, in financial counseling with chronic financial pain clients, it's about helping you build trust with your financial abilities again. And then you're incorporating active recovery in those rest states. It's not just going and binging on Netflix. It's okay, I did all these wonderful things in my finances, but in the midst of my rest, I'm just going to casually think about, you know, what is something I look forward to doing next with my finances? Not the have to do, but the want to do. And that leads us into behavioral activation. And this is for folks where overexertion may not be the problem, but lack of any exertion at all. Your issue isn't overdoing it, but underdoing it. You don't even know where to start. Well, remember that too much rest, doing nothing, also increases fatigue. It also increases avoidance, reinforcing negative emotions. So perhaps a little behavioral activation, which is not about increasing behaviors necessarily, it is what the financial doctor ordered. And here are the steps. You're identifying activities that bring meaning and enjoyment. You're assessing current activity levels. You start small and gradual. You track activities and mood. You address barriers and reinforce successes. So at the core, behavioral activation increases engagements that break the cycle of distress, which leads to depression. So, and its close cousin, anhedonia, and that's the inability to experience pleasure, interest, or joy in the things you once enjoyed. It's almost like you become numb or flat. And when I provided clinical therapy, I achieved this through solution-focused therapy, where you identify a miracle, where you do one small thing and you treat it like constant experimentation. Here's what behavioral activation tackles: stress, fatigue, pain, grief and loss, depression, isolation, reduced participation, and identity crises. So again, behavioral activation is perfect for chronic financial pain, precisely because financial distress often leads to a cycle of avoidance, withdrawal, and paralysis. The pain of the situation makes us want to shut down, but that shutdown behavior only deepens the financial hole and the emotional suffering. So behavioral activation works by breaking that cycle. The core principle is to schedule and engage in positive, value-driven behaviors, no matter how small. Again, let me repeat that. The core principle is to schedule and engage in those value-based behaviors, those things that you want to do, not what your financial counselor is necessarily telling you you have to do. There's probably a method, an Olivia method that I have that maybe someone else is doing differently. Or maybe there's a George or Sarah method that works for you, and you've just taken a task and you've turned it into something that is actually enjoyable and meaning for you. That actually helps make you feel more motivated. And the action itself creates the momentum that you might need and the drive, and it improves your mood as well. So here's how you can apply it. So the key is to make the first step so small that it's almost impossible not to do it. The goal is to build momentum and prove to yourself that you can take action. So let's say the financial challenge or the financial pain is living paycheck to paycheck. The avoidance trap, where the suffering is that you're feeling overwhelmed and powerless. You're avoiding looking at your bank account until you absolutely have to. You're believing that budgeting isn't for you because it feels too restrictive or has failed in the past. So here are the behavioral activation steps. These are small, concrete actions. So number one, just look. Schedule a time once a day to simply open your banking app and look at the balance. Don't judge, don't plan, just look. That's 1 minute. Track one thing. Write down just one purchase you made today on a piece of paper. That takes 30 seconds. Identify one subscription. Look through your last bank statement and find just one recurring subscription charge. That takes 2 minutes. The next one, pause before a purchase. Before one non-essential purchase this week, wait 10 minutes before deciding. And here's another financial challenge or a financial pain: lack of savings. And here's how you increase the suffering because of avoidance. You're thinking, I don't have enough money to save, so why bother? The idea of a fully funded emergency fund feels so unattainable that starting seems pointless. This leads to saving nothing at all. So here's some behavioral activation steps. Rename the account. Open your banking app and rename your savings account Freedom Fund or Emergency Fund. That takes 1 minute. Maybe even do the $1 transfer. Manually transfer just $1 from your checking to your savings. The action matters more than the amount. Number three, automate $5. Set up an automatic transfer of just $5 to your savings for your next payday. And another method, the jar method. Put a single dollar bill or your spare change from the day into a physical jar labeled savings. So here's another one, another pain point: debt. And how you increase your suffering is feeling shame and dread. Letting credit card statements or medical bills pile up unopened, ignoring calls from creditors, believing the total amount is too big to ever overcome. Here's something you can do for behavioral activation. Open one envelope. Pick just one unopened bill. Open it. You don't have to read it all. You don't have to pay it. Just open the envelope. Another method, find one number. Look at one credit card statement and find just the interest rate. Write it down. Another thing is to pay $1 extra when you make your next minimum payment, add exactly $1 to it. Another small but mighty behavioral activation is the 5-minute research. Spend 5 minutes where you set a timer looking up the term debt snowball or debt avalanche. Close the browser when the timer goes off. And I've spoken about PowerPay, and that is a built-in calculator that can do all that for you. And I assure you, by the time that 5-minute timer goes off, you'll be hooked and you won't want to stop. So the magic of behavioral activation is that these tiny scheduled actions break the inertia. They generate small wins that build self-efficacy and reduce feelings of hopelessness. Your improved mood and sense of agency make it easier to take the next slightly larger step. And that's what we're wanting to do in reducing chronic pain. So the last two items here in this chronic financial pain clinic is problem-solving skills and communication skills training. So yes, these two methods are also used with chronic pain patients. And financial counselors also use these with chronically financially ill clients. So problem-solving skills. We first have to identify the problem. Brainstorm solutions, evaluate the pros and cons of each, select the best solution, implement the solution, and review and adjust as needed. That's kind of how we build a financial action plan. But I know that if it were that easy, all of these steps would just become, they would be checked off, they're accomplished, and you're moving on. But we know, every professional knows, whether it's a healthcare provider or a financial professional, that it's not just that easy. It requires so much effort, so much energy just to get started on identifying the problem and brainstorming solutions, never mind the next 4 steps. So, but what these problem-solving skills can do is it could help you to adhere more to the action plan, to making lifestyle changes, to improve your financial management, your self-management, and how you're even self-monitoring or tracking your money. And we don't have to make this a complex financial action plan or a complex treatment plan to follow. We can make it as simplified as possible following those small behavioral activation steps. And then also, it's applicable to reducing relationship strain. And this leads us to communication skills training. And I did provide an interpersonal effectiveness episode as well. It follows, it's in the same series as the mindfulness series because we're using dialectical behavior therapy practices, mindfulness, emotion regulation, distress tolerance, and then the last module being interpersonal effectiveness. Healthcare providers and financial counselors alike know that social skills training is very impactful when it comes to helping your family members, your friends, your peers understand your pain and what you need to do differently and how you can enlist their support. So it helps you express emotions, your thoughts, your goals, your concerns while maintaining healthy interactions with your financial counselor, with your family, your peers, having those difficult conversations, and not just negotiating with your family and your friends, but also advocating for yourself with those families and friends. So I hope that this episode series has enlightened you on chronic financial pain. And to match the Sci-Fi 2026 class lineup, we're following the theme Hazards to Your Wealth. We'll continue with the clinics as we move forward in this season. I look forward to working with you more, and please remember to rate and review the pod wherever you listen.